Hello and welcome to The Pub. Yes, it is the end of season Tireless Den podcast special, episode 161 with your host Mark Mayo. Myself and Simeon have just decided to, you know what, it's the end of the season, it's nice and sunny out, we're going to go and do this with Spread Eagle near Elm Park and talk about Reading season and where it went wrong, where it went really wrong, and where it went only just a little bit wrong. So Simeon, how's it going, sir?
I'm very well, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very decent, thank you. Before we begin, I'm just going to have to make a little announcement in terms of the Patreon campaign. We are doing kind of a little thing we're going to think about to do for the summer in terms of the Patreon campaign. I haven't done so well in terms of talking about who's been donating over the course of the season. So basically, this is a Patreon roll call to thank everyone who has done it at the top of the episode, to just give everyone a shout out for the names that we have. So over the course of the season, Richard Clifford, Matt Everson, Hugh Willis, Philip Farrell, Jason, Royce Murphy, Michael Quinn, Martin Collins, and Anders Egerstead have all pledged during this campaign. So massive thanks to those guys for sticking a hand in the pocket for this campaign, even though it's been, let's face it, terrible from a footballing perspective. And our pledges at the moment: Mac Tiger, Richard Holloway, Dave Stevens, David White, Derek Wormsley, Andrew Feline, Andy Brown, Dave Harris, John Donlan, Ryan Nelson, Mike Crone, Martin Ingram, Sam Nash, Colin Cunnington, Brian Cartledge, Alex Mason, Pseudo One, Sasha Liddard, Alison Robbins, Martin Hay, and George Clay. There are about 29 of you, and we hugely appreciate your efforts, and we'll be making sure to do something over the summer to reward you for your patience, I think it's fair to say. So as it is, as I kind of mentioned, the footballing side of things hasn't been so great. Alas, we have to get onto it, and the season recap will be up next.
View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping this week's championship action.
So let's start then where it all began in the pre-season of 2017, those blissful days when we thought we were a good team, quite frankly. And, you know, the pre-season, is there something we perhaps have missed, missed at the time, should we say, in terms of the pre-season? Because they kind of brought them all away from the town. They went on that little tour of Holland and played two games a day and everything like that. We drew three, lost two of the important games, moving aside the two we played against QPR back-to-back. And, you know, was there something that we kind of missed that was going wrong?
I think at the time the recruitment seemed really good. We brought in a lot of premiership experience in shape of people like Leandro Bacuna, who'd been at Villa, Vito Minone, who'd been at Sunderland. And at the time it looked like really good recruitment. It looked like we'd addressed the needs in our squad. We'd added some more pace up top with people like Aluko and Barrow. But in hindsight, the recruitment just wasn't even enough. Left a lot of problems throughout the squad, particularly in midfield, at left back. Despite having three left backs, none of them were really up for it for the whole campaign. Unfortunately, Abita getting injured for the season, and in terms of strikers as well, massive failure in not bringing in another striker. A proper goal scorer. We couldn't replace Jan Koum against goals that were so important to us last year in 2016-17, and we just struggled for a focal point for so much of the year until Bob Varson really started to kick on from December, January kind of time. At the time, yeah, it looked like good recruitment, but in hindsight it just looks shoddy.
Yeah, well, I suppose in a way you can kind of define it as premiership experience, a few championship grafters in there, I recall Bodvast and Edwards. Bonfire with the youth players is a feature that kind of happened at the start, wasn't it? You know, Jack Stacey was one moved out. Instead of moving players out on loan or releasing them, we began to actually just sell them flat out and let them make their own way in the lower leagues. Do you think that perhaps maybe a bit of the... I mean, I'm hesitating to think it was too important because they didn't really play much of a role last season, much like Ali Al-Habsi did. Obviously, he was a shock exit that perhaps had more of an effect on the dressing room. But also on the dressing room, those youth players going just kind of took away a bit of the continuity of the club.
Yeah, I think it kind of took away the heart of the squad, really. You're looking at players who aren't necessarily going to get a lot of game time throughout the season, but if you've got an injury crisis, as we did, if you are lacking a player at any stage of the season, you want to be able to go into your squad, you want to be able to get a youth player who's really going to come in and put in his all for the club that they've grown up at and really got a strong emotional attachment to. And you had that with people like Stacey, Tanner, who unfortunately didn't get a chance. And in hindsight, it just looks like a a short-sighted decision to get rid of them. It seemed like the right call at the time. We hadn't seen a huge amount of quality from people like Stacey and Tanner when they were at the club, but there didn't seem to be any long-term plan for what to do without them, particularly when the squad looked very thin later on in the season. We really could have done with someone like Stacey coming in, Fozu coming in when we ran out of wingers at the end of the year.
Yeah, just adding a bit of something different. We moved on to the autumn. The warning signs were there when we conceded late at home to Fulham and late at home to Bristol. That was a total of, I think it's 3 points we dropped in those two games together. The panic only really set in for me, though, after when we were 1-0 up at Millwall and lost two late goals. Then we followed that up with a very poor home defeat to Norwich, who perhaps at the time we thought were a better team than they actually are, or turned out to be. Those games left us 20th. And, you know, perhaps we didn't really know what to do with ourselves at that point. We were just sort of, oh, OK, we're not going to be in the playoffs. The season's basically over already. None of us really believed in the relegation scrap. You know, what do you think we kind of did wrong then? Did we just all give up the ghost in a way?
I think there was a real lack of focus in the team in those first couple of months. It was about the time when we didn't have a striker at all, apart from the odd substitute appearance from John Daddy Bodvas, and we played...
Sam Smith occasionally played.
Exactly, he got a bit of game time, but we seemed to go with that false nine system that everyone loathed over the first couple of months. And that system can work if you really stick with it, if you really try for it. But we just seemed to be half-hearted with all our tactical ideas. It seemed to be changing the team around, no real sense of consistency. And I guess that injury to Jordan Obita as well really rocked the team, having a key player ruled out for the season so early on. And it kind of set in that chain of having to play Gunter at left-back, Bakuna at left-back, Richards at left back a little bit, and that constant chopping and changing throughout the team, the lack of consistency in the side that we did so well from in our playoff campaign in 16-17, it just really started to fall apart in those first couple of months. I'd say I was still quite optimistic at that point, weirdly. I guess because of the Brian McDermott season when we won the league. That sense that, yeah, you can have a really rough start.
You're only about 8 points off the playoffs, even when you're 20th. Yeah. Obviously, you've only played about 10 games. But, it always does seem kind of possible. And that, I mean, we were kidding ourselves in reality, weren't we?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But we got into November and we had a sudden, really out of nowhere, spike in performances. We went to Derby and won, went to Sunderland and won. We almost beat Cardiff. And I think that Cardiff game, the one we drew 2-2, was such a turning point in the season, because we've always been a bit mentally fragile. The defence wasn't perfect. When the defence was good, the attack wasn't perfect, and nothing really clicked. But we were 2-0 up at Cardiff, who were a bona fide good team at that point, December 11th. And then we just conceded two late goals, and that really took the stuffing out of the team. And since that game on December 11th, Jaap Stam only won one more league game as Reading manager. That was away at Burton before he got sacked some months later. And that late goal, we continually conceded late goals throughout the winter period. Do you think that was the thing that sent us into the relegation battle rather than just a mid-table season?
Yeah, and I think it's right to raise that Cardiff game, because it really kind of exposed how mentally fragile we were, how psychologically we didn't have that edge to really hold on to a win. We were fine at getting leads, particularly that Cardiff game. Thought we were excellent in the first half. We played some really good football. We looked confident against, at the end of the day, one of the best sides in the league, a team that had just gone up automatically. So that was a really good sign, but then for it to be undercut so disappointingly, it really set the tone for the next couple of months. And I guess when it happens a couple of times, when you get a couple of those disappointing draws, those disappointing losses, like the Brentford and the Burton and the Barnsley games, it really sets in. It really starts to snowball and spiral out of control. And I guess that's what did for Jaap Stam in the end, that he couldn't get control of that situation. He couldn't stop the rot.
Yeah, well, I mean, over the turn of the year, it did all fall down. The late goals continued to flow. I think the late equalisers at Barnsley and Forest were so important to, you know, because the home form wasn't great, and Yap Stam was always talking about the fans, and he wasn't happy with a lot of it, and we knew that that was how it was, and it, you know, we kind of accepted it. If we're going to get some good away wins, then we'd be happy with it in a sense. But those started drying up. It just, there was nothing going right for Yap Stam by the time he left. And with hindsight, do you still agree with the decision to sack Stam? Is it something that maybe, you know, he'd have kept us up anyway, could have kept on?
I was, I'd say, a bit hesitant to want to sack him at the time. I wasn't too sure that any one manager could come in and really kind of turn around a club that was in the middle of a lot of problems, in terms of on the pitch and off the pitch, psychologically, tactically. It was going to take a lot for any one manager to come in and turn it all around. In hindsight, Clement has just about got the job done. So on the face of it, he's done well in that sense. He's achieved what he set out to do. But I guess the sense that Reading have been really poor under Clement in so many games, in, I guess, on the whole, out of those 8 games that Clement's been in charge of, there hasn't been a huge amount of improvement. Yes, defensively against QPR and Preston to get us those wins, but there were still a lot of really shocking games in there. Collapses against Villa, Ipswich, Wednesday were very kind of Stam-esque almost. It was almost as if we hadn't changed manager.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, yes, I'm glad that another manager came in and really kind of brought in some fresh ideas that Stam couldn't, but it shouldn't really take away from the big problems behind the scenes that did for Stam, and Clement is going to have to sort out in the summer.
Yeah, those cracks are definitely still there, and I think that, you know, those two gritty wins that we got against QPR and Preston, Yap Stam wouldn't have produced them. He might have produced wins, but they wouldn't have been in the nature they were, and the nature they were was hugely important to the way that we continued for the rest of the season and the way that we kind of look back on it and stayed up in general. But the thing is, I wanted Stam gone after we'd lost to Burton and Birmingham in that sort of Christmas period. The fact that we left it so late almost meant that there was nothing Clement was going to be able to do in such a short space of time. He was going to be able to sort out the defence, but the defence, even under Stam earlier in the year, wasn't the real issue. And things have kind of, you know, as the players have shown that they're not as good as perhaps they need to be for this level, we have continued to sort of drop down the table. But I mean, in terms of your overall verdict for Clement then, are you satisfied with the job that he's done in the last few weeks? Because I would give it a 6.1 out of 10, a just above average, a just, you know, just enough, basically.
Yeah, sounds about right. It's a passing grade. He's done everything that he's set out to do. I'm happy with is that he's prioritised what he needs to do and what he doesn't need to do. He knew that he needed to come in, make Reading hard to beat, basically teach them how to defend again. And he's done that in essentially the bare minimum games that he had to do it in. He got 2 wins, he got another draw, and that was just about enough. Going forward, I want to see a lot more from him. I want to see him really kind of build the team up in a much more rounded sense, particularly going forward, keeping the ball, things like that. But on the face of it, from what he's done so far, I'm happy enough.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a division. If we'd have been 17th and won a couple more games, it'd have been nice at the time. But in reality, I don't think it makes much difference going to next season. And you want your warts and all approach to, you know, bear fruit and have an effect. But that's how it is. So that's our season recap. We're going to be moving on in a couple moments' time to Pub Chat and talking about all the extra little things, covering the website, and then we'll get on to your questions in the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
For the first time in 9 years, Westie has won the Prediction League. A round of applause from all of you at home and listening. It is quite the achievement. I mean, it's the law of averages means it's pretty much happened at the right time for his quality. But he's unfortunately not with us tonight. Westie was planning on a family occurrence, meaning that he can't. So he sent me a little speech, He says he'd like to thank his mum and dad for making him so pessimistic, the Reading players for making his ideals become a reality, and most of all, my own brand of negative result predictions that have got me my first championship in 9 years of doing the show, from its humble beginnings on Fancast to the giant it is today. I thank you all. Congratulations, Westy. You have not only come up with 28 points, compared to Tom 27, Wim 26, Johnny 25, myself 21, and Dave Handbags Harris on 19. But if you take all of the points over the season, if they were correct, Westy's predictions were 44 points, which is the same as the team, which is quite the feat in terms of basically he got to about 44 points, I think it is about March, and then he's just predicted defeat after that, and that's how he's won the division. So congratulations. For the record, Wim was the most optimistic. If Wim's predictions were correct, it would have been 73 points Reading would have got this season. So you can see how he got that club gig, basically. And we also have on the website, there's been the prediction league that Ollie's been running. I believe there's a mug for the winner, which is going to ship Lake out. There's won the website prediction league. And hopefully we'll be continuing that next season. Obviously, we'll continue having the prediction league for the podcast. Yourself, Sim, might be jumping onto that then. You are the boss. So, I mean, you can basically tell me that you're on it. Early predictions for next season then. We'll talk more in depth about it as the mailbag and whatnot comes on. But where do you see, if you had to place a roundabout region that Reading going to finish in, where do you think it'll be?
I'm looking in the kind of the 9 to 12 kind of number in terms of the table. I think Clement's going to do a good job in terms of getting rid of some of the deadwood at the club, really kind of reinvigorating some of the players that are already there, but he's got a big job to do to clear out this kind of negative psychological aura that's around the club and has really held us back for the last year. And he's got a big job to do, so I think expecting more than a positive mid-table finish is a lot to ask for a guy in his first full season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be if he gets ninth, I'll be delighted. I think my prediction for next season is draws. I think we're going to become one of those teams that draw a lot of games, 1-1s, 0-0s. I think he'll make the defence substantially better than it's been. I think he's a good manager for sorting out the defence. I don't expect the attack to get much better, though. I think unless we can sign a player, like unlock an absolute gem, or maybe someone like Danny Loader just turns, you know, comes of age, basically, I don't think we're going to be pushing for playoffs next season. I can't think that. How can we think that when we've finished 2 points, 3 points off the relegation zone? So, yeah, draws, I think. I think we'll be the team with the most draws in the Championship next year, is my prediction. And we'll be discussing next season, and I suppose a little bit last season, in more depth in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter.
At The Tarlhurst End.
And facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Ben Warden gets us off to a start then on the mailbag, asking, should Paul Clement's tenure so far be seen as successful? He's kept us up and some defensive improvements, but still boring to watch and prone to collapse. I think we've kind of covered that, but I think in a word, yes, successful. As I say, that C-plus grade that I'll give him, just because, I mean, we stayed up and ultimately Stam went because, yes, the star was boring, which hasn't been cured. Yes, the defence wasn't great. The attack wasn't great. Only one of those has kind of been cured, but we have stayed up.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess if Clement had come in a couple of months earlier and he'd essentially replicated this finish, if he'd kept us about 3 points away from the playoffs, you'd probably have to be a bit harsher on him, because there hasn't been any improvement in terms of attacking. I'd say we actually gone backwards in terms of attacking, in terms of being entertaining.
Less expansive.
Exactly, yeah. Say a lot about how bad the football was under Yap Stam, but to be honest, I think it's got even worse under Clement. It's got even less entertaining. But at the end of the day, he only had 8 games to save Reading's place in the second tier, and he's managed to do it.
Yeah, I think that's going to be how it is. And to be honest, Paul Clement's how the history books look back on Paul Clement will not be judged by this season, because he's kept us up, and it'll be judged how he does next season. I think that's totally fair. Clyde 1998 asks, when was the last time we had a season as bad as this one? It'll probably have to be the worst season we've had for a generation or so. I mean, we're of the same generation. It's probably the worst that I've seen.
Yeah.
The one we finished 19th under Clark, we had the cup run, so, and even the McDermott one, when McDermott came back for the second year, we had a bit of a cup run. I mean, I think going back to, you'd have to go back to the pre-promotion Pardew days, back into the really early 2000s, the early days of Medeski when...
Tommy Burns era, I guess.
Yeah, for a team. I mean, that was a team that had a lot of expectation about it, a lot of investment in it as well. Didn't quite pull it off. And I think probably that's where I'd have to go to think of a season as worse. You can always say, that said, the 2012-13 season. Statistically, Reading's worst ever season in their history, where they won six games.
Yeah, but I guess
with the Premier League season, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I find it hard to kind of be too harsh on a Premier League season, to be honest, especially given how much of a mess the club was in at that time, with Zingarevich coming in and really kind of messing up the recruitment to quite a large degree. So there was a lot of pressure for that side to do well in the Premier League, and at the end of the day, it wasn't too surprising that they went down with such a whimper.
Well, by January we were doing quite well. If you look at that season all the way up until the sort of Wigan Villa games at home, we were having a good season. We were enjoying ourselves, weren't we? So I think that was almost a better season than this one. Certainly, just about.
Yeah, very similar to this season in the sense that we had that one really good month or so of form, and the rest of it was not much to write home about. But. Yeah, we had some fun in that season. You're looking at the wins over West Brom and Sunderland and getting that late draw against Chelsea. There were some really good moments to come out of it. We even had a half-decent cup run or two in that year. So, push comes to shove, that was, a season that you can take some positive things out of, but there's not really anything to write home about,
to fondly look back on. Well, we've got the six best games on the website at the moment. I think the Derby 4-2 away win is walking away with it. Certainly was my best game that I went to this season. Anyway, Andy RFC asks, who do you think will be club captain next season? I mean, Paul McShane has a contract, so no one's going to buy him, so I would have to say Paul McShane, period.
Yeah, I think it has to be him. There's been a bit of speculation on Twitter about maybe should he be one of the players that gets cleared out over the summer. He's been here a couple of years.
Though, unless, I mean, he's in LA on holidays. I doubt he's going to be signing for LA Galaxy. That's the only sort of move I can see him taking.
Yeah, exactly. But that experience that he has, that character that he has, to be honest, that's the kind of thing that we really need at the moment. We're really crying out for that experienced, passionate player who's really going to knock some heads together in the changing room. I know it hasn't gone right this season, but you look at the effect that Paul Clement had on Thiago Alori, who was doing really poorly earlier in the campaign. A new manager's come in and he's really reinvigorated him and really let him focus on his defending, and he's become a lot more confident as a result. And next season, I don't really see why that can't be the same for Paul McShane.
Yeah, Michael Baggs asks, with the current squad and FFP limitations, what are fair expectations for the summer window and where in the table should be aiming for? I think any championship team has to be aiming to be in the mix for the playoffs by March. I think if you're a championship team and you're obviously a Burton, if they were still here, has to look at survival, but anyone else, the nature of the league, you have to be saying, let's be within 6 points of the playoffs with 10 games to go, and everyone will be happy with that. In terms of the summer window, I don't know, it's hard, because if you start pinpointing one position, then I think you forget the fact that this squad as a whole needs a couple more leaders in it, needs a bit more fitness, some runners, some physical strength. I think for the summer window, it's just perhaps as big as an overhaul as you can get.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to work out how much we're going to do in the window, to be honest. You look at the new owners who have come in, they spent a lot of money last year on Aluko, Bakuna.
I can't see them spending that sort of money this summer.
No, they're going to look at the amount of money they invested last year, and are they really going to want to do that again? Are they going to want to invest their hard-earned cash in players who are likely not really going to get us above a mid-table finish? So it leaves Clement with a tough task of getting a lot of talent out of probably not too much money. He's going to have to be a bit more savvy, probably. He's likely going to have to, say, look in the lower leagues or or abroad, but to be honest, that's where Reading really tend to thrive in their transfers. When they go to bigger clubs in England and pay a lot of money for them, a couple of million for people like Manone or Aluko, those transfers don't really tend to work out as well as the few hundred thousand pounds for a up-and-coming player from Stockport or from a club on the continent. So for me, that's what we have to focus on.
I can't think of a time when Tevedon's gone to the lower leagues in England and bought someone, really.
There's only one example. I think that's Callum Harriott coming in from Charlton.
Yeah, no, and he's, you know, injuries aside, he's a decent prospect. And if he was fit, I think he'd have done relatively well. So, you know, I think it's something for Tevedon to look at. And I think Ron Gourlay is going to have a big say on that as well. But him coming for Chelsea maybe won't be so keen on going to the lower divisions. Kind of on the same note, Quonsy One asked, what's the biggest need for the summer transfer window? Which players should be sold / released? And Theo asks, can you go through the team and discuss who you would keep and who you would sell at the end of the season? I mean, to be honest, if any player, I would sell any player. I would want to keep Moore, but if we get offered £10 million, then he's going to go, fact. I would want to keep Bodvarsson. I would be happily keeping Manone. Omar Richards, Jordan Obita, some of the young kids. Anyone else, unless I'm missing anyone obvious, if a bid comes in, I'm like, yeah, go on then, sell it.
Yeah, there's not a huge amount of proper resale value throughout this squad. You're looking at Moore as our really good asset that we're really going to want to hold on to. But apart from that, there's some decent players, people like Bodvarsson, Obita, perhaps Kelly or Swift. But there's not a lot of really obvious talent that you want to keep. In terms of what we really need to prioritise in terms of signings, I'm happy with the defence of the players we've got at the moment, but apart from that, the midfield looks really weak despite having seemingly a huge amount of centre midfielders. None of them are up to it.
They're all very similar, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. There's no one real standout player in the midfield who's going to change the game either in a defensive sense or an attacking sense, and that's really where we need some quality, really where we've kind of been hamstrung this season. We need to bring in that quality in the summer. Up top as well, Bodvarsson's a decent striker. He's going to run all day for you. He's going to get a few goals. 10 for the season is a good return for someone who's come in to a really bad new club and had to settle after a couple of months out injured. But you need a goal scorer. You really need someone who's going to
put the ball in there. I mean, Kermigan aside, we haven't had a goal scorer since Shane Long, really, as far as I can go back. In terms of Glenn Murray was a goal scorer, but he only is here for 6 months. I do like the fact that we're discussing which players to sell and leave at a season review with Metallica's Suicide and Redemption on in the background, which is really quite fitting, especially as it gets quite dark here in Tarhurst. So let's move on then. Joseph Searle, we'll kind of couple of these questions together. Joseph Searle asks, which academy youngsters could you see more of in next season who have been out on loan? And Tom asks, is it time to sort out the joke recruitment has become? Actually getting in talent from the local area that are one good enough and two given a fair and equal opportunity, just like Eamon had planned. The last few years have been a disgrace, eyes wide shut to the obvious slip through the cracks. We've kind of touched on the youth recruitment stuff, not so much recently in the podcast, but over the years, and it is hard to get that insight, especially from a fan perspective, as to who is slipping through the cracks and who is genuinely, you know, missing out. Let's look at Aaron Cole, for an example, a player we all thought was very good, played in the Championship, didn't do quite so well, went on loan and did, quite frankly, very badly, is now out of football, and you'd have thought, you know, there's chances for him to get into the game, even on a non-league level, but he hasn't done it. And that kind of almost justifies, in a sense, what the club have done. Compare that with someone like Tariq Fosu, who's gone to Charlton, had an okay season, bits and bobs, not a great season. You know, it's difficult, I think, to say that the recruitment in the youth system has been bad, because there's quite a high chance that the players we've had in the youth system over the last 2, 3, 4 years just haven't been very good.
Yeah, it's a massive step up from youth level to senior level as well, when you're looking at, as you say, people like Aaron Cole, who have looked very good at youth level, very much impressed. They look really good playing at a junior level. but then when they are asked to make the step up to senior level, they just seem to go missing. I assume it's a psychological thing, because the talent is definitely there. You look at people like our uncle Josh Barrett as well, who's very talented at young level, but he's gone out on loan to Coventry, not really pulled up any trees there. And you have to ask, is it a psychological thing? Do they have the right attitude to really make it at the top level? On the flip side, it's why I'm really impressed with people like Kelly, Shibola, Novakovic over the last couple of years, who have gone out on loan to not the best sides. Kelly's been on loan in non-league, Shibola at the bottom of League 2, I think it was, and Novakovic in, was it the Dutch second tier or the Belgian
Telstar,
second tier?
Dutch.
Telstar, the Dutch second tier. But they've really knuckled down, they've really adjusted well to senior football, played regularly, in the case of Novakovic, scored regularly, and shown that they have that maturity to make the step up that other players like Barrett, potentially, Cool, definitely, haven't been able to show.
Yeah, the one thing I want to add on is on what Tom says about local area. It's very easy to look at Reading and think there is a team with a massive catchment area. And it's true, you know, we do have a big catchment area. But look to the right on the map and you see Arsenal, Chelsea, QPR, Spurs, even West Ham all have Reading in their catchment area, or what they consider their catchment area. And going to the Champions League final in a couple of weeks' time is a bloke called Dom Solanke, who is from Reading and who went to Chelsea rather than going to Reading. Yes, you can say he was perhaps too soon, he came too soon for the Reading Academy. Maybe if he was 16 now he'd be in it, but that is the fact of the matter. Reading are a Category 1 academy, but they're not a Category 1, they're not a Premier League team. And when it comes to money, when it comes to advertising your club to a 16-year-old, if they're from Reading, they'll have Chelsea and Arsenal if they're good enough. And if they're not good enough, then why would you want them at Reading anyway, just because they're from Reading? So it's a really difficult one. In terms of, you know, if they are good enough, then I'll have them. It doesn't matter where they're from. So it's one of those, as I say, we never know the full picture as fans, and the club are incredibly good at making that the case as well. So we'll always follow on Tyler's end. And in terms of youngsters to get in from who have been out on loan, you kind of mentioned Novakovic. Just think there's a chance he might be able to get into the team next year. I would like to see him, having been in Holland, go to League 1 or League 2 and do a good 6 months there first.
Yeah, it's a big decision to make over him. Whether they keep him in the youth system, send him out on loan to a higher level, like, say, League 1, as you say, or bring him into the first team. They've really got a... It's a tough decision to make, but... And this is the kind of... The stage in his development where you really need to get it right. For me, I don't really see any reason why he can't be, say, third or fourth in the pecking order at Reading. You've got Smith, who's done okay in the handful of first team appearances he's made. Kermigan is on his way out in terms of retiring next year. Bodvarsson's our senior striker, but after that, there's a lot of competition to be had. There's a lot of room for someone like Novakovic to come in and maybe not start immediately, but get onto the bench, get into the matchday squad a few times, and really prove to Clement why he is why
he's a
talent.
There's a lot of competition for a player like Novakovic, though, because you've got Danny Loader coming through, the next big thing, quote unquote. You've got Sam Smith, who's already scored a championship goal, who should be ahead of him. Kermigan is going to be here next year unless he reverses his decision to retire, and Bodvarsson will be here next year as well. So it's almost the worst position to be as a striker, because we're going to be looking to sign a striker as well. Joseph Mendes is out of contract, may or may not be here. We need definite goal scorers. We fannied about too long with non-goal scorers. Maybe they'll be good, but maybe they won't be. That's going to be the main area of investment, in my opinion. So for a striker, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, but I guess in a sense it could be an opportunity.
Exactly. Score goals, then you're in.
If there's another player coming in, someone like an established goal scorer, then that still gives a chance for Novakovic to perhaps try and up their game to really prove to Clement why they have to be there. If there's a lot of okay strikers in the squad, perhaps the competition isn't at the same level. There's not the same pressure on Novakovic or Smith or Loader to to really bust a gut in training to impress Clement. Perhaps if another striker comes in, that will be the motivation to let Novakovic really try and impress Clement over the summer.
Yeah, we'll move on then. Dave Stevens asks, will the summer break be enough to reset mentally, or is the toxic mentality within the squad only going to be solved with mass changes? I think we've made one of those changes already, and that's the manager. Paul Clement will have a different mentality and will have a different approach to pre-season than Stam had, importantly. You're looking at fitness, you're looking at Kyle Halabi, he's a bit of a fitness coach. Nigel Gibbs as well is going to be in there, who's, you know, been at Reading a lot of time, knows the success that the club can be capable of. I think it's 30% summer. I think it's good that the summer's come. It's obviously the right time for some rest now. We're obviously safe. But 70% of it for me is getting some fresh players in there, getting someone who, it might only take one player who can consistently hit the back of the net, and then that lifts everyone. It might only take one, but you do need changes for it in the squad.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of freshening the squad up and really making it feel like a new club, I guess. Everything just got so stale with the second half of last season that it just became so depressing from a fan's point of view. But also off the pitch, a lot of the task of resetting that mentality is going to come down to the fans. How do they react to what Paul Clement and Ron Gourlay are trying to do? Because last year Reading went through a really tough time, particularly at home, not winning at home on a Saturday, I think only once,
yeah,
the whole season,
Preston,
the Preston game.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because it was such a negative, almost hostile atmosphere from the crowd. I know they were turned off from the style of play, but if Reading are to really kick on next season, they need a lot more support, they need a lot more positivity coming from the stands if they're to really believe that they can be a different club to the one that failed so abjectly last season.
Now, I think with the fans, it's going to be a case of, you know, signs of progress. Also, fans won't turn up next season expecting us to win every game. There's no way that's going to happen after such a season like this, but it is going to be signs of progress in terms of the style, in terms of the results, just little bits of improvement here and there. They don't have to be that big, but just something to get the fans excited. I think the fans are desperate for it and ready and waiting for it. And, you know, if you give them the chance, they will take it. Last question then for the mailbag. Smudger asks, we were lucky to survive the drop, which we didn't deserve, but what is in place for next season? Funds, ? Players signing new contracts, ? Deadwood players that should be released, ? And expectations. I think the thing to think about in terms of what is set up for next season is the fact that Ron Gourlay is there. He's been there when he joined. Was it January or just before January?
Ron Gourlay, July. Last July.
Last July. Oh, it's even longer than I thought then. So yeah, he's been there for a whole season now. And he... Yes, obviously there's the case of maybe they weren't planning until they knew they were safe, but in reality they were planning for a championship season next year. And he knows what he wants. He's a successful football man in a large sense of the word, and he is someone who will be very clear, whether it's in what Brian Tevreden does, whether it's in how much money they have, he will have a game plan. He will have a path to victory in his mind. Might not be the right path to victory, but I think that's the most important thing, is that there will be a plan. And it's going to be a different plan from the ones we've had in the last 3-5 seasons, which haven't gone so well.
Yeah, and it's got to be a coherent, properly thought out, stable, for me, long term plan that Reading are going to enact. I know the that 3-year plan from Tevreden and Stam kind of got a lot of stick over the last couple of years with it failing so badly, but at the end of the day, that stability, that long term thinking is what a championship side like us needs to bring in if we're to properly realise the potential and ideally eventually get back into the Premier League. I'm positive, I guess, looking forwards when you look at the relationship that Clement and Gourlay have. They both work together at Chelsea, obviously. And if they can kind of resurrect that working relationship and really work together and properly work out a plan that they can both agree to and both move forward with, then Reading stand a much better chance. The problem we've had recently with so many different groups being at the club, you had the Ties, Yap Stam, you had Brian Tevreden, Ron Gourlay as well. Lots of different pieces coming in that didn't really fit together that well. And I guess you get the sense that they were kind of different factions at the club, all with their own visions for the club.
Yeah, there's been a lot of politics, hasn't there?
Exactly. You had Tevreden on one side wanting to give Yapstam a longer chance to, I think, give him to, until the summer. I think that was the rumour. But then you got Ron Gourlay coming in on the other hand, whose appointment by the new Chinese owners. So you got those lots of different factions, and it upsets the club if not all parts are moving together properly. If they're not all moving in the right direction, then you can't really be too surprised when the club fails on the pitch, I guess.
Right, well, we'll be moving on to talk about a few specific final little details about next season with any other business to round off the Tahlehurst podcast for 2017-2018.
The Tahlehurst podcast. Any other business?
So, two things I want to know then in any other business. First thing, I want three specific things that you want over the summer. And the other thing are the three fears you have for next season the most. Quite specific if you can make it. I'll kick us off with three specific things that I want over the summer. Firstly, I want to see us sign a goal scorer. I know it's a cliche. It's really obvious. It's like saying I want a fit wife. It's just I want to see a goal scorer come in. Very simple. Secondly, I think I want to see the pre-season started to be announced now. We've got Eastleigh away. There's talk of a pre-season tour of Austria. I want to see us go back to the Medeski friendly against the Premier League team before we start the season. A couple of local away games, maybe Maidenhead or Swindon again we had recently. Something like that would be a nice pre-season. So they're my first two. I'm going to think of my third one while you drop in a couple.
Yeah, I agree with that, that pre-season friendly note. It's really... It's great because it gives the fans a chance to properly have some fun over the summer, to have an away day at a non-league ground. I think Eastleigh was announced a couple of days ago as our first pre-season friendly. It gives the fans just a chance to have a bit of fun, to have a nice Saturday afternoon out, to, without any pressure to wanting the team to win, or needing the team to win even. So yeah, that really helps that connection between the fans and the team. Other things I want to see over the summer, I want to see some of the younger players in the squad really proving to Clement, really trying to get in his ear and really impress him and give him a reason to have them in the squad next year. People like Novakovic, but also Luke Southwood and Lewis Ward coming back off loan spells. People like Axel Andresen as well, who has kind of been in and out of loan spells over the last couple of years. If they can really prove to Clement why they should be involved next year, then I don't see why they can't impress. And I'm going to go back to you before I think of my third one, because I'm blank at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's kind of awesome. One of the things that I do want to see over the summer is John Daddy Bodvarsson tear up the World Cup, but that's not going to be my that's not going to be my third thing. I don't know what I want to see. I know it's not going to happen, but I would like to see I'd like to see actually some more solid plans for the future of the club in terms of the Royal Elm Park and the training ground. Those are the things that I want to see. I want to see some proper, you know, maybe even as much as we're going to take some fans around the training ground construction site, some stuff like that, some really, like, just to let us know what's going on, because the training ground's been talked about, you know, all these little things that have gone quiet recently. Just a couple of little things, just bringing some fans in, letting them go and see some stuff, pointing out some plans that they have, and bringing the fans back into it, because I can't think of the... Obviously, last season they did the kit release, which the fans and Tahlehurst went down to, but I can't think of too many examples when Reading have said, here are fans seeing something that's important, here are the plans that we have for the future, like, you know, there it is, sort of thing, on a plate.
Yeah, exactly, and I guess building on that point about the fans, I want to see some proper movement on safe standing. I know that's been talked about a lot. I think it's gone to Parliament after that petition reached 100,000, I think it was.
Did you see what the Huddersfield MP said, that safe standing was more likely to bring back racism in amongst the football fans? I'm not racist when I'm sitting, but if I can stand up, then go, I'll tell them.
It's ridiculous. It shows how out of touch our MPs are when it comes to something like this. When it's their viewpoints are so, they seem to be so defined by what football was like a couple of decades ago.
When they last watched a football game, almost.
Exactly, that hooliganism culture from a couple of decades ago, which is just... It's not the case anymore. I know there's a few examples of it here and there, but the sport is very different, and safe standing isn't a continuation of hooliganism or of that bad, negative, kind of violent streak of a football fan. It's a very positive thing. It's about safety for people who are going to stand up, regardless of what the local MP tells them. It's about really creating a good atmosphere at football matches. So to see a comment like that, it shows just how it's just frustrating for football fans to properly try and enact some good, positive change in the sport. But I hope that eventually our beloved Parliament will see some sense and bring in some common sense laws about this and really kind of rejuvenate the fan experience at matches.
Yeah, I mean, to sort of add on to that point a little bit, the Club 1871 stuff had a meeting on Wednesday night that we're hopefully going to be hearing about a little bit and see what their plans are for next season. There's obviously all kinds of stuff going to be going on behind the scenes over the summer as the club work out what they want to do. Fears then, let's talk about fears. My first major fear is that we don't learn our lessons in recruitment, that we go out there and pick up the odd, you know, championship hangover from, you know, a Burnley, like a Barnsley player who's not done so well recently, or a Birmingham player who's not really in the Birmingham team. Yeah, we'll have one of them because we need a left back or whatever. Just, that's the sort of mentality we've had in the transfers recently, and I'd like to see us go and pick some players from leagues that we don't usually pick players from and say, you know, this is our squad, we believe in these players and they're going to do well for us, because we haven't really done that. We haven't really backed ourselves in terms of making a shock or a coup or anything like that recently. So my fear is that we just continue doing what we've been doing and we hope that it gets better out of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. Can't disagree with that. The recruitment has just been so scattergun over the last couple of years. There was kind of it seemed to make sense in Yapstam's first summer of bringing in quite cheap players, cast offs from some of the Premier League's better sides, people like Blackett from United, Swift from Chelsea, Liam Moore from Leicester, signings like that, and then also bringing in a few cheaper signings like Behrens and Mendes and Vandenberg from the continent. That summer seemed to kind of make sense in terms of what we wanted to achieve with our signings. Fast forward to January and those bizarre loan signings, people like Oxford and Graben, Much, and then bringing in Popper as well, and then not playing him, having bought him for however many millions of pounds from Romania. The plan just didn't seem to be there. I don't know what the philosophy was. And then bring it forward to the next couple of windows, and the philosophy, the plan of what we're trying to achieve with our signings, just I can't make any sense of it. So I really want to see that proper, consistent, sensible transfer policy come out of the summer, and hopefully Reading can make some unexpected coups in the summer.
I think another fear that I have is that one or more fellow championship teams are going to get taken over by rich agents / foreign businessmen / sheikhs / whatever, and just continue to stratify the league, really, because we're no longer in that wealthy part of the league. We're in that kind of middle ground. I think our wage, I saw something recently that suggested our wage bill was around about 12th or 13th in the league. It's not in the Adkins times when we'd just been relegated, it was in the top 5 or 6, but we really have slipped down in that recently, and I'm worried that that's going to continue, and the more we slip down the amount that we're paying compared to other teams, obviously I don't want us to throw money down the bin, but the more we continue to slip away from other teams, the more likely it is that we'll fail to beat them.
Yeah, we're kind of getting squeezed out by that, this kind of top 6 to 8, or perhaps even top half the table, seem to be kind of emerging, these teams who have either been taken over by really rich owners from from abroad or teams that have just come down from the Premier League, teams like Villa and Norwich, who can afford to spend a lot of money on players that we just cannot compete with. They can afford to go out and spend a couple of million pounds on a signing, and for that signing not to work out. We can't afford for that to happen. So it's frustrating to see that kind of that new kind of upper tier of the Championship really emerge, but it's something we're going to have to be inventive in terms of how we beat it.
Yeah, means we have to work harder basically, yeah. And do more sort of unexpected things. And I say, what is your other fear then? What's one particular fear that you have for the summer? Is it going to be, we sort of cover recruitment and how the league's going to look, is there anything that you don't want in terms of style? Is there something that you fear a mistake that the club could make again?
In terms of the playing style, I'm a little bit worried that Clement's going to be too cautious, too conservative, and continue that defensive aspect in the same way that he has done this season. You look back at the comments of Derby fans and Swansea fans, they were really turned off by his negative brand of football. I know Swansea fans were very disillusioned by how cautious and conservative he was in his second season at the club. I know he lost Sigurdsson and Llorente, two of his better attacking players, but you want a manager to try and entertain the fans. I know Stam had a go at it and he wasn't particularly good in his second season, but he at least had a go. Clement, I'm worried, is going to set the bar too low. He's going to try and grind out 1-0 wins and 1-1 draws whenever he can. And if that does continue, then I wouldn't blame the fans if they continue to not turn up.
That's going to be a big thing, isn't it? It's how the fans react and how the attendances go and everything around that. To round up this podcast then, let's kind of look towards the summer in terms of the Tyler Sten podcast and website. What's our plans for the summer then? I kind of want to do John Daddy Bob Varson watch for the World Cup. We'll have that. We'll have Ollie Allen doing a bit of World Cup preview in terms of what each country has relative to do with the team, whatever sort of stuff we've got lined up.
We've got a fantastic away kit World Cup coming from our assistant editor Will Jones, who will be looking back on some of the finer away kits over the last 20 years or so at the Medeski era, and getting you to vote for your favourite one, really kind of definitively trying to work out what our favourite one is. Also, we're going to have a lot of plenty of World Cup tie-in content. John Danny Bodvarsson watch would be great. Be great to see him do well with Iceland and repeat his Euro heroics from a couple of years ago. And we'll obviously have a lot of transfer content as Reading are busy in the transfer window and hopefully bring in some fantastic signings from unexpected quarters.
Yeah, it'll be a very interesting summer to watch. Hopefully it'll be more interesting than last summer. Hopefully it'll be more interesting than the last season that we've just had. But, you know, as Reading fans, I think it's a good time for us. Now we're sure of safety. We can just have a little bit of calm, maybe just for the rest of May, we can just sit back, watch the playoffs and everything, and almost be thankful that we don't have to lose at Wembley this year. That's a positive end to sign off on for this season. We don't have to go and watch a penalty shootout defeat with all the hope and all the expectation. We can just sit here and relax and perhaps forget about football for the next few months, and we'll be back as per usual, hopefully in some sort of guise, the podcast wise, next season, and I'll be seeing you all then. Hopefully we'll drop in for a summer podcast. Hopefully there'll be something to talk about maybe mid-July or just before the season starts. And thank you for joining me tonight then, Sim.
That's quite all right.
And we will be joining you in due course. Enjoy your summer. Thank you for sticking with us throughout the season. And thank you for sticking with this podcast till the end. It's been an absolute pleasure. And we will see you next time. Come on, your arse.
You smile, funny how the crowns always leave a trail, even when it's